Case number 14-5059, Fernando Zavalis, appellant, versus Barack Hussein Obama, in his official capacity as President of the United States et al. Mr. Ferrari for the appellant, Mr. Schultz for the appellees.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors.
And may it please the Court. Eric Ferrari on behalf of the appellant, Fernando Malasadas Zavalis. I will endeavor to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honors, the Kingpin Act is meant to dismantle narcotics trafficking networks and bankrupt kingpins. It is not meant as an indefinite punishment, nor is it meant to effectively block someone forever. This case is less about a man trying to get his name removed from a list, as it is a case of overreach by the executive in maintaining a designation, relying upon criteria outside of the scope of the Kingpin Act, and relying on evidence which the appellant was never offered an opportunity to respond. When reviewing an agency action under the APA, the court must consider whether the decision was based on the relevant facts.
You say never given an opportunity to respond. I thought at any time, including right now, he could bring challenges, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. The reason why we've elevated this case to this level is because we believe the agency is relying upon factors which are outside the scope.
So it wouldn't be accurate to say he's not had a chance to respond. He's had a chance.
Judge Santel, what we mean by that is he hasn't had an opportunity to respond to the evidence OFAC relied upon in June 2013. He has had an opportunity to respond to the information that was provided to him in 2005, as well as to a questionnaire that was provided in 2009. When reviewing an APA action, the court will look to the relevant factors.
But just on that, he could respond now to that, right?
Your Honor, he could, but again, we have the situation where we believe the agency is relying upon factors which are outside the scope of the Kingpin Act, and that's why we pursued litigation in this matter.
It might have been better to have said that rather than saying he hadn't had a chance to respond. Just say he's relying on factors outside the Kingpin Act, and then you won't have us quibbling with you over the way you mischaracterized it.
Understood, Your Honor.
Okay.
When reviewing the APA action, the court should look at the relevant factors and determine whether there was a clear error of judgment. The relevant factors here being whether or not Mr. Zavalis meets the definition of a significant foreign narcotics trafficker under the statute. And the definition there says it applies to any foreign person who plays a role in international narcotics trafficking. And the Kingpin Act defines international narcotics trafficking as any illicit activity to cultivate, produce, manufacture, distribute, sell, finance, or transport controlled substances or narcotics. There's no discussion of Mr. Zavalis' ability to do so in the future being a criteria to meet that definition. There's no discussion of his prior conduct alone being a relevant factor in satisfying that definition. And we believe the lower court was wrong here because that's what it based its decision on. If you look at 583 of the appendix, what the lower court says is that Mr. Zavalis is not off the radar and is still able to communicate with family members and other potential narcotics traffickers and in order to continue drug trafficking, but more importantly, to continue laundering and managing ill-gotten proceeds from his prior drug trafficking activities. Thus, OFAC has substantial evidence. I would ask the court, because I know the appellees and the lower court have relied upon this extensively, in the Holy Land Foundation case, which is out of this circuit, 2003 case. The government has tried to draw the parallel. Well, since, you know, we've relied on, because of the deference afforded to the agency, Holy Land would control here. But there's a big difference between Holy Land and this case. Holy Land had a different authority. And I'm not just talking about the IEPA statute, but the executive order that was issued in that case, which was 13224. That executive order allowed for designations based on a party who materially assisted in or posed a significant risk to engage in terrorist activities. That's not the authority at play here. If you look at the language of the Kingpin Act, it speaks to present conduct. And we don't have present conduct in this case. Now, the Supreme Court has held that when
someone's convicted in a foreign court of drug trafficking offenses, doesn't that take the government a long way towards what it needs to show in a case like this?
I think it would take the government a long way to show that he at one point met the criteria, but what about in 2013 when the agency made its decision?
Mm-hmm.
If we were to allow them to consider that fact alone, then
that would mean as soon as you're imprisoned in a foreign country, you're automatically off the list, which defies common sense to think that should happen so quickly, or that the activities are ended once you're in prison.
And that's the point the government's made. But what we're saying is not that his being in prison warrants him being delisted. What we're saying is it's dubious that, given his current state of incarceration, he could meet this definition. Not saying he couldn't, absolutely, or someone who is incarcerated for narcotics.
And what are you requiring of the government to be able to show that he's still a danger?
Some demonstration, some evidence that has a temporal proximity between the decision reached and the actual conduct of narcotics trafficking as defined in the statute. As opposed to, and the government goes into great detail about what he did in the late 90s and the early 2000s, even up into the mid-2000s, but once you reach the point where OFAC is making a decision in 2013, we don't have a lot of evidence about what was occurring around that time. So that's what we believe the agency should have based its decision on.
The news reports that they rely on, what was the time period of those?
Well, Your Honor, there's a lot of news reports in there, but what they're relying on principally is found in Appendix 425, mm-hmm. and it's the continuing control of assets and cell phone. The cell phone is a May 2013 article, and there's several articles about continuing control of assets. The Panamanian accounts, I believe, is from 2009. The Peruvian assets is from 2010, saying that his family controls certain assets. And then there is an article.
And in your view, those are too far removed in time to make a current determination?
Yes, Your Honor. And I would also state that.
So we have somebody who was convicted by a Peruvian court, and there's some evidence that as recently as 2013, he may be even involved in this conduct. And that's too far removed in time?
Well, Your Honor, I think to the 2013 articles, what we would argue is that evidence doesn't rise above the scintilla, because all the 2013 article on the cell phone said he had a cell phone. We have this newspaper article where Uruguayan drug traffickers are continuing to use cell phones from prison to continue mm-hmm. narcotics trafficking activity. There's no connection drawn between Mr. Zavallos using that cell phone for anything, much less narcotics trafficking. So we would argue.
If you are relying on incapacitation, insofar as you are, say, well, he's in prison, he can't be doing drug trafficking now. Why isn't that evidence that it is possible to be doing drug trafficking under the circumstances of incarceration?
Well, Your Honor, we're saying it is possible for him. We find that proposition to be dubious given the state he's in. And OFAC, we don't believe, has provided sufficient.
That's why you found it to be dubious, but I'm not sure why you found it to be dubious.
Well, given the fact that he's restricted by his incarceration from communicating to the outside world.
So it's not as if there isn't lots of evidence that takes place, right? It doesn't common sense suggest that if someone who has a history of drug trafficking has a cell phone, that he may very well use it?
He could use it,
but you said dubious. Why is it dubious? I mean, common sense is that these things take place all the time.
Well, I think it's dubious as to whether or not he meets the definition, given his incarceration, not as to whether or not he's using the cell phone. But
using cell phone for improper illegal activity. That's what I'm talking about.
I believe that you could draw an allegation from that, but that's not a specific fact that he's actually.
You're saying that's an unreasonable conclusion for them to draw?
I think, one, it is an unreasonable conclusion.
Was it lawful for him to have a cell phone in that prison?
I'm not an expert on Peruvian law, but I would assume it's not.
I assume so.
And we would also say that the fact that he had this cell phone only would speak to ability, which, as I already pointed out, is not a criteria we see under the Kingpin Act. As the court has said, when agency action conflicts with a plain reading of the statute, then it's arbitrary and capricious on its face, and that's supported by other Supreme Court precedent that says that it will not vacate an agency's decision unless it's relied upon factors which Congress had not intended it to consider. And that's what we have here. We have consideration of factors that were never intended by Congress. So in order to allow a Kingpin Act designation to be maintained based on prior conduct and ability alone, it would lead to absurd results. For example,
your plain language point is plays being present tense?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
But let's think about the results if we allow them to do this. If Mr. Zavallos, his ability to engage in narcotics trafficking and his prior history of narcotics trafficking is a relevant factor, then he's never going to lose the ability. So long as he's living and breathing, even assuming he gets out of prison, he'll be able to given his history, he'll be able to communicate with other narcotics traffickers. I mean, he'll have that ability. Or if you look at it from the perspective of continuing to control assets, this would lead to a result where someone was a narcotics trafficker 30 years ago, they purchased the house, they still live in the house, so they meet the criteria today. And I don't think that's what Congress intended. They intended to dismantle networks, they intended to attack current conduct, and in relation to managing of assets, what they were looking at is laundering of funds to finance continued narcotics trafficking activities.
Remind me, the newspaper article talking about him maintaining connections with the members of the family and controlling the assets. What was the date of that? Did you say 2010?
Well, there were several articles.
Yeah. What's the most recent one?
The most recent was the article about the shadow advisor. That was actually from January 2013.
Yeah.
And the shadow advisor article talks about that advisor being under investigation since 2011, mm-hmm. which goes back to our point that any conduct Mr. Zavallos had in relation to that shadow advisor first was only in relation to keeping his house, is what the article alleges. And also would have occurred prior to 2011 or within 2011 mm-hmm. and before that time. Again, I go back to this point about temporal proximity. Mm-hmm. As we argued in the brief, it was exactly for these reasons that we requested de novo review. The Supreme Court has held de novo review is
yeah,
more.
Now, when's the last time we used de novo review for an APA matter?
Your Honor, I don't have that answer offhand, but
we
I know.
We can only find one instance. It was a long time ago, and it was far more egregious facts than anything you've alleged here. That would be striking and remarkable for us to do that.
I do understand that, Your Honor. I understand it's used sparingly. We do feel that the facts of this case warranted for the following reasons. The Supreme Court said it's in relation to severely defective agency procedures, meaning that the impacted party was not afforded an opportunity to respond to crucial facts.
But didn't we already determine that you have the opportunity, you just don't like the way it came out?
Well, Your Honor, we didn't have
that. To this day still have a post-action review on it, couldn't you? I mean, you are having it right now, right this minute.
Your Honor, we do have an opportunity to respond, but again, if we were to respond at this point to OFAC, it would be fruitless because they're relying upon factors that are outside of the Kingpin Act statute. And if you look at OFAC, and I point you to Appendix 425, you look at OFAC's decision.
What's missing in the procedure is so egregious that we ought to go to the extraordinary nuclear option of an overview.
Well, it's because OFAC, again, I go back to Appendix 425. And what they say there is we are relying upon the fact that he's continuing to control assets and cell phone. Well, that evidence was developed after the 2009 questionnaire was sent. We had no idea that's what they were relying upon. And again, I go back to Holy Land here. And if you look at Holy Land, they were designated in December 2001. They filed suit. OFAC, and that was a blocked pending investigation. OFAC in April of 2002 gave them the administrative record they were going to rely upon. They had 31 days to respond to that administrative record, and then after their response was made, OFAC upheld the decision. That's not what happened here. Mr. Zavallos, by the most conservative measures, reinstituted his request for reconsideration in 2009. OFAC sends a questionnaire, has no mention of cell phones, has no mention of continuing control of assets.
We're talking about procedure right now.
Correct.
Okay. What's missing in the procedure? You got notice. You're saying the notice is inadequate. But that sounds like a substantive argument, not like something that tells us to depart from the normal standards of review for APA proceedings.
Well, Your Honor, it's
you
our
got notice and you got hearing. You've had both. Now, pre-action notice is something that's too late to talk about that now.
Well, Your Honor, and that is our de novo argument. If the court feels otherwise.
You may want to move on to a different argument.
Yes, Your Honor. I would just point out one thing for the sake of the record. The government has stated that de novo review was not granted in the cases we cite. I think there's just a couple important points to keep in mind there. In both Citizens Reserve Overton Park as well as the Camp v. Pitts, the inadequate procedure alleged was to the decision rendered. And inadequacies within the statement of reasons in those findings, but that's not what occurred here. OFAC obviously.
What's the case in which a court has granted de novo review upon which you can rely?
Your Honor, I cannot cite to a case where it's been granted. But assuming arguendo, this court believes that OFAC's procedures were adequate and the factors that they relied upon were within the scope of the Kingpin Act. we would continue to maintain that the evidence they relied upon doesn't rise to the level of substantial evidence.
You're well into your rebuttal time. We'll give you a couple minutes back.
Thank you, Your Honor. Okay.
Thank you very much.
May it please the Court, Benjamin Schultz on behalf of the government. Fernando Zavallos has been and continues to be a large-scale international drug trafficker. His illegal activity
spans... How do you know he continues to be? The latest evidence is what, 2011? I mean, you've got a cell phone. There's no question of cell phones. But what's the most recent evidence that he continues to be a drug trafficker?
Sure. So the most recent evidence is the cell phone and the continued control of assets. But it's important to understand
And what's the basis of the belief that he has exercised continued control of assets and when?
Sure. So it's important in looking at that evidence to situate it in its proper context. And that proper context here starts with an individual whose large-scale drug trafficking enterprises have spanned three decades. And I don't hear much of a dispute from the other side that at least as of 2005,
that's not enough, though, is it? I mean, the language is plays, right? I mean, there's got to be some.
Your Honor, the agency here concluded that Mr. Zavallos was currently engaged in drug trafficking.
And that's what I'm asking for. On the basis of what evidence, when?
Sure. And the way the agency looked at it, which is.
And you haven't given me a date yet. That's what I'm sure. Most
and
interested
and I, in. Sure. Let me try and explain the logic, and hopefully that'll become a bit clearer.
Okay.
The agency's logic was we have someone who has, for many, many, many years, engaged in large-scale international drug trafficking. And the agency concluded, certainly, as of 2004 and 2005, this man was a large-scale international drug trafficker. So at that point, the
only... that's a decade ago, right? Or a decade,
so at that point, the only question is, has some sort of circumstance changed such that this man's three decades of conduct should no longer be attributed to him? Should we infer that he has somehow stopped his drug trafficking activities? Now, this is not a case in which he's come forward and said, okay, I used to be a drug trafficker, but I stopped. This is not a case in which he said, yep, you've dismantled my network, I'm incapacitated. This is not even a case where if you look at his filings before the agency, he said, well, I'm in prison now, I can't do anything. Instead, his position throughout the administrative process was, I never was a drug trafficker, and I am not one now, period. And so what the agency said in this case, quite reasonably, was, look, we don't believe you that you never were a drug trafficker. We know that's not true. And so the only question is, has the mere fact of your incarceration somehow constituted some sort of changed circumstance that even you are not acknowledging is a changed circumstance such that you're no longer a drug trafficker? And the answer was no, because one, well, we know that you still have links to your network of contacts because you're managing and controlling assets.
But again, when's the most recent evidence that he's managing and controlling assets?
I believe those are the articles, some from 2010 and I believe also at least one from 2013, that he was continuing to have...
But your opponent said the 2013 article was referencing conduct that occurred later than 2011.
You know, I think he's talking about the management of the house. It's also the case that I think there was a 2013 article. I can double-check that. It's certainly
Let's imagine that he's right. Let's imagine that the most recent evidence the government is relying upon goes back to 2011. Is that legally sufficient?
It is. Because
how so?
Because the argument here, and remember, his only argument is, I'm in prison now, there's a changed circumstance. So the question is that in fact a changed circumstance? And since the agency has post-incarceration evidence that he continues to be involved with his network, he continues to engage in illegal activity, we know that the prison isn't incapacitating him.
Enough.
I'm sorry?
Is management of assets enough?
Your Honor, we're not.
It's one thing to be engaged in drug trafficking. It's another thing to be ex post facto involved in managing assets that somewhere along the way came out of drug trafficking.
Sure, we're not here to say, and I don't think the agency concluded that the mere management of assets was why they designated him. Rather, what the agency said was, you have someone who for three decades was a large scale international drug trafficker, and that person is not even acknowledging their past history. So the only question then is, has his incarceration been some sort of changed circumstance such that before he was an international drug trafficker and now he's either given it up?
When a specific occurs, the designation will continue as long as he's alive in prison.
Well, Your Honor, as long as the agency has a reasonable basis to believe that he's still involved with drug trafficking, and here they did.
Well, that's what we're trying to find here.
Sure, I think...
And that's what I'm asking you about and what Judge Griffith's asking you about.
Well, absolutely.
And the question I asked you was whether management of assets actually was enough.
Well, Your Honor...
Because the question he's raising, and you say, yes, when we have several, but the question that the appellant is raising is the management of assets that were once connected with drug trafficking sufficient to make out drug trafficking for purposes of continuing the designation?
Your Honor, whether or not that's sufficient, the agency concluded not that it was mere management of assets, but rather that that piece of evidence taken with the other evidence in the record was indicative of his continuing drug trafficking in the present. And the reason was...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. The reason was that you start with the fact that this man has been a large-scale international drug trafficker for 3 decades.
So let me get this right. So are you suggesting that if he had said in the past, yes, I did this stuff, and now I'm paying my debt. If he had said that, and then there was evidence of asset management, it would be a completely different case?
It would be a different case, and it would be a different inquiry for the agency. But it's important to understand that those weren't his arguments before the agency. In fact, you can take a look at what he sent the agency in 2009. His submission is at pages 328 to 339 of the joint appendix. And the key paragraph is on page 329, where he just makes this offhand remark. He says, I do not satisfy the definition of a significant foreign narcotic trafficker. I was not a narcotics trafficker at the time of the designation, nor am I currently a narcotics trafficker. I did not play a significant role in international narcotics trafficking at the time of the designation, and do not do so now.
Suppose he was incarcerated and there was no evidence of continued activity while in prison.
I think that would be a lot harder case, although it would be one for the agency in the first instance. Mm-hmm. And if the court concluded that that was the state of the evidence here, I don't think...
I just assumed the government would say just because you're incarcerated does not remove the basis for your designation under this statute, because otherwise it would render it a bit absurd.
That is certainly right. And the government's position is absolutely that if you have been a drug trafficker for 3 decades and then you suddenly end up in a Peruvian prison, the agency doesn't automatically have to assume, okay, well, I guess that's it. You've broken all your ties with everyone and you've mm-hmm. stopped all your illegal activities. And indeed, their indicia in this particular case that we affirmatively think that that's not true. I'd be happy to address any other remaining questions in the case. Otherwise, we'll rest on our briefs.
Were you able to find any cases in which we exercised de novo review?
I'm certainly not. I'm not aware of any post-Camp v. Pitts.
Okay. We'll give you back 2 minutes, Mr. Carr.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just the 2 points Mr. Schultz raised, one as to context and circumstance change and failure to acknowledge his prior history. Nowhere is that made clear that someone contesting their designation has to acknowledge and admit that they were at one time at the definition. If you look at the reconsideration or the regulation which governs reconsideration process before OFAC, all it says is you can submit evidence and arguments to demonstrate either an erroneous designation or a change in circumstances. There is no requirement in that regulation that you admit to what you've done. As far as management of
acts... What's your best statement of what the change of circumstances is that should compel us to revert?
Your Honor, change of circumstance obviously starts with the fact that he's incarcerated. There's been no evidence that he has used any of the facilities available to him as far as cell phones, ability to communicate with other people.
The change of circumstances is the incarceration.
In part, yeah, and I would say a large, significant part. That's correct, Your Honor.
But what else? What other part is there?
Well, there's the simple fact that he has not engaged in any narcotics trafficking. There's no evidence that he's been involved in directing laundering of assets. There's no evidence that he's involved in actually making sure drugs are sold or transported or anything along those lines. And I think, to Judge Santel's point, is management of assets enough? And I don't think it is. I think what Congress intended here is that you're dealing with the management of assets to continue drug trafficking activities. That's why in the definition of international narcotics trafficking, they use finance as opposed to control over assets from ill-gotten proceeds. So if there's no further questions in the court, I'll rest. Thank you
very much. Case is submitted.